Welcome to the Southern Naturalist Podcast, Nature Notes Edition. These are shorter episodes where we read and discuss interesting information about nature, written by Bob Thomas, a naturalist and environmental educator in the greater New Orleans area for 50 years. My name is Amay Thomas, and Bob is my dad. We're both professors at Loyola University New Orleans and naturalists and fascinated by nature and all she has to offer.
As the founding director of the Louisiana Nature Center, an avid nature lover who's a certified Louisiana Master Naturalist and a professor of environmental communication, I began writing nature notes based on natural history observations and in response to frequent questions.
And there are hundreds of these nature notes that Dad started writing decades ago, so we're excited to share some of our favorites. We hope to encourage more people to experience the healing power of nature and develop a stronger will to protect it as our home. This Nature Note podcast is brought to you in part by the Loyola University Center for Environmental Communication. You can find all of the Nature Notes and more by visiting our website at lucec.loyno.edu. Welcome, nature lovers, to another special episode of Dr. Bob's Nature Notes. Today, we're going to be reading and discussing two of Dad's nature notes, so it's a twofer nature note day. The first is all about a butterfly that is very special to those of us who live in Louisiana. It's called the Gulf Fritillary. And the second is all about the passion flower, which just so happens to be the host plants of the Gulf Fritillary. We also have a very special guest joining us today. Her name is Linda Auld, but most know her as the Bug Lady. She is a caterpillar mama who for over 40 years now has raised over 111 species of butterflies and moths at her New Orleans shop, Barber Laboratories. So, Linda, thanks for joining us today.
Just my pleasure.
Yes, great to have you.
Good. You know, we were just sitting here chatting, and neither Linda nor I can remember when we met. It was so long ago.
That's great.
But I know it was an important occasion because we've been good friends for a very, very long time.
That's for sure.
M.A. mentioned the Gulf Fritillary is very dear to all of us, and it's going to become more dear because this year, in 2022, our state legislature named it, at the end of the session, named it the state insect.
And there was a debate over it because many people wanted it to be the monarch.
Yes.
Exactly.
But the monarch is our national insect,
right.
So we need something different.
Exactly.
And the Gulf is great because in the summer and the fall, there are so many Gulf Fritillary caterpillars on my passion flower vine that they're just looking at me like, well, where's the food?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I absolutely love the Gulf Fritillary because they're elegant. I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. Their underside of their wings have these silver patterns, and so it's this flash of silver as it flies by you. And they visit us starting every spring, all throughout summer and into the fall. And right now in my yard, where I've grown passion flower for the past couple of years, there were at least four hovering over just one portion of my plant today alone. So, I mean, they are, if you feed them, they will come. I mean, it's one of those things.
One thing I can tell you is that the very brightly colored orange, on the top, they're bright orange. Those are the males. And the more dull colored orange, those are the females.
Okay. So is that just like in nature, you typically see that where the males are bright because they, you know, the male wants to be chosen by the female and the female has the egg, so she wants to be less conspicuous and kind of blend in?
Sometimes that's the rule, but not all across the board.
Okay.
Because like the monarch, they're both the same color, and the only difference is that the male has two black patches on the bottom wings that are their pheromone patches where they attract the female.
Okay.
The female doesn't have that. She has thicker veins.
Right. And they're bigger.
The females are usually bigger in butterfly species because they have to accommodate the weight of the eggs in their abdomen.
Yep, and eggs are very big compared to
well, there's like 400 in there.
Yeah, a lot. And actually, we're going to spend our next episode is going to be with Linda talking about monarchs and a lot of specifics about monarchs. So definitely I'll tune into that if you're interested as well. Let's get into our nature note that you published in 2009.
Oh my gosh, long time ago. Again, one of the reasons that we love fritillaries is because if you know what they feed on and you know what they nectar on, you put those things there, you will instantly have them. And my backyard is almost unfortunately full of passion flower. It took me years to get it started. I kept planting it and it died. I put it and it died. And now I can't control it. But again, the payoff is wonderful because what happens is once you have them there, you have the Gulf fritillaries. And you not only have them for a few moments, you have them for days and days and weeks and weeks. And right now, anytime I look out in my backyard, I see 50 or 60 of them flitting around. And so they're flitting around because they're laying eggs and they're feeding on the flowers that I've planted. So everything is working well. But when they land to lay an egg or they land to feed, they put their wings up. And that's when you see those beautiful silver streaks underneath.
That's
so
right.
We've already mentioned, we keep saying we're being repetitive. It's such a gorgeous animal.
It is. And but, you know, the males are always the first ones to come in because they know that the female is going to show up.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'll drive off other male competitors from their little spot. And they'll get some nectar, and they'll get some sun. And then here comes a female. She's busy, busy tasting the leaves with her feet, looking for the right spot to lay the egg.
Right.
And then you get all the courting and flirting and mating and egg laying. It's right. Great.
Well, let's talk about that mating behavior because it's actually pretty interesting. So depending on the species of butterfly that you talk about, there might be some different kind of mating. But let's specifically talk about Gulf fritillaries. When you said that the male shows up, so the male actually engages in an action with the female, and that action is called wing clap display. And he continuously claps his wings, he opens them and closes them, and eventually the female will put her antenna between the opening and closing of the wings. And after the male ceases that wing movement, the male butterfly moves into the position that facilitates the whole mating process. And so you'll often see insects with their hind ends together, their abdomen, because they have terminal or the end genitalia. And so that's what they're doing. So they're mating, and that usually will last about 11 seconds, which is pretty cool. Another fun thing, which happens a lot in insects and spider worlds and happens in the Gulf fritillary, is the male will often present the female a nuptial gift. And so that is usually in the form of food. And in this case, when he does offer that to her and she eats it, what it does is it helps with nourishment and the development of those eggs that he has just fertilized. So it's really good for his fitness and passing on his traits.
And the males usually get that through puddling. That's when they go in they stick their tongues down in the dirt and the mud puddle.
Okay.
And they suck up the minerals from the soil.
Okay, and so let's talk about that, because that's definitely something we wanted to mention on here today, is about puddling, which is a behavior that you will, a lot of people will have seen before, but might not have known what was going on. So describe what you mean, and then we'll backtrack and say what's happening again. Okay, so
I love to watch puddle parties.
What is puddling?
Puddling is when the male is collecting minerals to pass on to the female, which aids in the egg production.
And so how would you know that males were puddling at the time?
Because they're in a mud puddle.
They're actually in a mud puddle. Yeah, so when you see a bunch of butterflies together on the ground in a mud puddle, that's what they're doing.
That's actually right.
Getting minerals from the puddle, which is why we call it puddling, so that he can do what?
So he can pass that on to the female for egg production.
Okay.
That's part of his little package that makes him special.
So cool.
I've also seen him try to get minerals off of a truck, you know, like bird droppings, moisture on
That's
fungus.
Being resourceful.
Dung.
Love
it's
it.
Like, oh, really? You want to put your tooth, your mouth in that? Come on.
Well, puddling is a big deal. And when we're in the tropics, it's amazing. Because if you see turtles sitting on a log, there's butterflies sitting on their eyes.
Yes, I've seen pictures of that.
And then if you see crocodiles lying up on the bank, butterflies on their eyes. So it's pretty amazing how functional that is and how pandemic it is anywhere around the world.
Yep.
We've seen it in Africa.
I see it when I'm on the NABA butterfly counts up in the Delta. the Delta National Forest. There's a phenomenon up there where if it rains the night before, you can see 100,000 butterflies in one day.
Wow.
And the puddle parties all along the road.
Puddle parties.
You have to stop and try to count them because they're all flitting around. It's like you need a remote control to say stop so you can count them. So you have to kind of guesstimate how many. But there's 5 predominant species, so we kind of try to focus on what the other ones that are different. So that, because we're there to document the different species that we see.
Yeah, it's also fun just to very carefully step into a puddle party,
and
you're have them flying
in
all around.
A tornado
exactly.
of butterflies.
Exactly.
I love it.
That we've said that, everybody out there is going to be waiting to
yes.
find a puddle party
yes.
so they can step into them.
We're waiting for rain, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we just
yeah.
thought puddling was fun. Now we can call them puddling parties.
Puddling parties.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So what's interesting is that that once you start seeing butterflies in your backyard, the first thing the inquisitive naturalist is going to want to do is to try to tell one from another. And in the beginning, you're going to make lots of mistakes. You're going to see things from different angles and different shades of light and that sort of thing. But after a while, you start to recognize color patterns and patterns on the wings.
Exactly.
And flight patterns and where they are tend to be and that sort of thing. So and then a lot of them have these orange wings or some other bright color. And we call those aposematic patterns. Because what they do is they actually have some chemicals in them that makes them a bit toxic to certain predators. And so once an animal like a monarch has these kind of patterns on their back and a blue jay has one and spits it back out because it's nasty, then another butterfly comes along with orange wings and
they've learned.
They tend not to go to them.
That's right.
But if they do... and even if they like it, they have to be very careful because the next one they try will probably be a monarch again.
Mm-hmm.
So those are called aposematic patterns and colorations. And we're going to talk about that a lot as we go through our
We actually already have talked about it a bunch, so we need to start yeah. playing a game. Every time we talk about a species with aposematic coloration,
right.
we need to ring a bell.
Exactly.
That'd be fun. Okay.
Those bright colors are an indication that I taste bad.
Yes. Yes. Back off.
It's really great.
I'll also add for the audience, if you want to look for more examples of this, you can Google viceroy and monarch and then see how similar those yeah. two species resemble each other. It's pretty interesting. You'll start noticing these things in nature when, you know, as you become, you get your search image for certain things like.
They don't fly the same.
They don't fly the same, but.
And they don't use the same host plants, so
right.
you wouldn't see a viceroy on a milkweed, and you wouldn't see a monarch on a willow tree.
Yep, so as you learn more about their behavior or about different diagnostic characteristics, that also helps you with your identification. So
exactly, that's what helps us when we're on our butterfly counts, that we know where the specific plants are, and we know that we're supposed to be seeing a particular butterfly in that area.
Yeah, really good point, because that's what naturalists do.
Mm-hmm.
They learn those kinds of little intricate patterns.
The botany is a big connection with
right,
butterflies.
Right. No, it's like that for just about everything in nature. Well, our experience of having these things in the backyard is that the fritillaries tend to lay their eggs, not just randomly on the plant, but they tend to lay them on these little spirally tendrils that the plant uses to climb and cling with things like that. And they will lay them on new leaf growth, this tender.
That's right, because they want their babies to have young tender
yeah.
leaves to chew on.
Sure. Yeah. And as someone who studies bugs, I tend to move very slowly as I'm looking for things and looking on the underside of the leaf, which makes sense that they often lay them on the underside because then they're protected from the sun and from being readily seen by potential predators.
But some species have specific areas where they lay. Like the viceroy, it lands on the leaf, and then she backs up to the very tip and lays an egg right at the very tip. And when the caterpillar hatches, it eats its eggshell, and then it eats the part of the leaf but leaves the rib. And so as it progresses, it goes out and eats and comes back, and it poops on that. It's called a frass chain.
Ooh, I love that.
And so they poop on it so that the ants won't cross it and come eat them.
Brilliant.
But then when they get bigger, then they really spend a lot of time trying to make themselves look like a bird dropping.
Yep.
Well, let's don't miss the chance to increase our vocabulary. The word frass is a very important word to entomologists because that's the scientific name.
Okay, let's say poop.
Poop. Fritillary caterpillars are beautiful little things. You look at them and you say, ooh, maybe I shouldn't touch this. It's got these little black spikes all over the back. But it's basically an orange, small caterpillar with these nice little soft black spines on the back that don't tend to hurt human beings. But they're wonderful to look at and cute.
They are, and they have a lot of personality as they move around. But that's part of their protection to make you think that they could sting. And out of all the caterpillars we have in the New Orleans area, there are only four that can sting you, and they're all moth caterpillars. There's mm-hmm. no butterfly caterpillar in our area that can actually sting you.
Right, yeah.
And, boy, and if you do get stung, all you need is some tape. You put it on your skin, and you pull the barb out, and the pain goes away.
All right, well, let's name those four right now so that our listeners can look them up.
It's the Io.
Io moth.
The buck moth.
The buck moth.
The puss moth.
Puss moth.
And the saddleback.
Saddlebacks. Okay. So, yeah, if you look all those up, you will invariably have seen some of these before. And if not, be on the lookout for them now.
They spend their days eating maypop leaves and the rest out of sight in the lower surface of the leaves.
And for those of you who don't know, maypop is the passion flower. It's another name for the passion flower that we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's the seed pod.
Right. Correct. Exactly. And the Fritillary chrysalis, which is the pupa, all butterflies have that stage, and it's called a chrysalis as opposed to a cocoon. About an inch long, brown, and simply resembles a shriveled up leaf hanging on a stem.
It really is camouflaged.
Yeah, so Dad just mentioned the pupa is known as a chrysalis with a butterfly, and so that's just a semantics thing. So it's more correct to call the pupa stage of a butterfly a chrysalis and the pupa stage of a moth the cocoon.
But they're doing the same thing.
They're doing the same thing, but usually the chrysalis is hanging on something, whereas often the cocoon is in the ground, in the soil, or something like that.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're right. It looks so much like a shriveled up leaf. I mean, sometimes I'll have 20 or 30 of them on a screen.
And the color can vary mm-hmm. Depending on the color of the surface that it's on.
Right.
I've seen it on when we were on a butterfly count at the Bonnie Corray Spillway. It looked almost like the color of the gravel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and there's another word, cryptic, which means that it's hard to see. It's camouflaged. And so a lot of these things are extremely cryptic. And if you are sitting there working with your plants and all of a sudden your hand gets near one and your eyes focus on it, you go, oh my gosh, a chrysalis. And unless you know what it is, you're not sure what it is, you just know it's a chrysalis.
It's so, totally defenseless in that stage.
Totally.
So, but they do move around to let you know, hey, I'm alive, leave me alone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to wrap up, if you want gorgeous Gulf fritillaries in your yard, you need to have passion flower for them to lay their eggs on. And the fritillaries are guaranteed to entertain you all summer and early fall with their frenetic flights around your yard. They're just there all the time.
So that's really cool. And so we said this was a twofer today, a twofer. So let's get into the nature note that focuses on passion flower.
Among the most beautiful flowers in the world are the passion flowers, regardless of where you see them in the world. They bloom as a lattice work of vines. The flowers range from pale, nondescript tones to bright reds and the gorgeous regal coloration of our largest native species, the purple passion flower, Passiflora incarnata.
We also have another one in our area that likes to grow in the shade. And that provides food for forest butterflies like zebra longwings. And it has a yellow flower.
Yeah, and it's interesting to know the coloration difference because if you're in a forest where there's not as much light penetrating, you would want the lighter color. You're going to see it more likely if you're the insect flying around.
Passionflower vines are very aggressive, and once established, They may cover bushes and are very difficult to eradicate. That is their downside. So if you've planted them in good containers where you can maintain them, they're just beautiful and they do just as well as everything else. So we try to get people to do that. Their upside of the flower is beauty and serving as a place where beautiful orange, black, and silver Gulf fritillary butterflies lay their eggs. And they're attracted in because of that. The fruit of the passion flowers are locally known as maypops. Thus, the colloquial name for the flowers and plants, too, are maypops. So they may be eaten fresh or used to flavor ice cream due to their sweet aroma. And in fact, in Belize, we eat
maypop ice cream
a lot because it's sweet and wonderful. Passion flowers have a symbiotic relationship with ants. They provide ants a nutritious nectar via structures called extrafloral nectaries. It's a nectar source outside of the flower. That's what that means. And it's located at the base of each leaf. In return, the ants protect the leaves from predators, including the fritillary caterpillars. Such activities are much more common in the tropics than they are locally.
Well, in order to protect the plant and the nectar that it produces, these ants will literally carry away the eggs and smaller Gulf fritillary caterpillars. So once those caterpillars grow their spikes, they have pretty much survived the ants.
It seems to me that they would eat the eggs and the caterpillars.
Yes, they do when they're smaller. Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
Some passion flower species actually have tiny structures that resemble butterfly eggs. They make gravid butterflies think the eggs are present, so they seek laying sites elsewhere.
That's actually very common practice in wildlife conservation. It's to create decoy organisms in order to encourage repopulation of a specific area. For example, placing wooden ducks in an abandoned pond could potentially lead to real ducks returning to the pond, mating, and creating a new population there.
A lot of times when people want to start having caterpillars in their yard, you have to introduce something. And Francis always taught me that when the butterflies emerge as an adult from the chrysalis, the meconium, the birthing fluid that falls down on the ground, also creates an odor that draws other butterflies to that area.
Mm. Interesting. That makes sense. Total sense.
Absolutely. Pheromones. Absolutely. That's the cool thing about studying the natural history of these animals. You always find things like that.
I'm always trained to look at curled leaves because there might be a caterpillar on there.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I'm a caterpillar mom. I can't resist.
That's right. No, you've shown me many things when I walked right by them. Said, uncurl this and you will find a blankety blankety blank.
Sometimes it's just a spider that hops out.
Right.
But that's part of the fun.
Well, thanks for joining us to learn about Gulf fritillaries and passionflower. For our next episode, we are coming to your shop, Linda, to talk more about monarch butterflies and their miraculous migration and some major threats to their population. So we hope you're more inspired to get outside and start searching for butterflies yourselves after listening to our episode today. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and write a review if you enjoyed it. Also, find more information about the species we found and more resources for naturalists by following us on social media and our website, lucec.loyno.edu. Thank you to our Loyola intern, Kitty Pearlswig, and to our guest expert, Linda Auld, for joining us today. Our music is composed by a Loyola PopCom graduate, Hunter Wainwright, and this episode was produced by Emma Reed. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Happy butterflies.